When you put everything into that one basket and then you get a security update that needs to come out, like Adobe Commerce Enterprise software, they have security updates, almost at a month's, kind of release cadence at this point. And sometimes they're important to apply. Not all of them are so critical that you should drop what you're doing, but some of them are. And if you get one that's so critical that it really should become a priority, the size of the ask really starts to shift depending on whether or not you just use it as a commerce engine or if you use it for all of the above.
Hello, and welcome to the Funnel Podcast, a digital experience podcast by Blue Acorn ICI. Each month, we'll uncover new strategies and topics to improve digital experiences. I'm your host, Sarah G. I'm the Senior Content Marketing Manager here at Blue Acorn ICI. This week, we'll be talking more about the steps organizations can take to become more enterprise ready with our guest, Doug Hatcher. Doug is an enterprise Adobe architect and solution consultant at Blue Acorn ICI. He's interested in headless technologies and next generation computing trends. If you want to learn more about Doug after the episode, you can visit his website at doughatcher.com. During this episode today, we really dive into how businesses can start to improve their commerce experiences and certain steps they can take to become more enterprise ready. I hope you enjoy. Thanks so much, Doug, for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Since we're talking about being enterprise ready, could you explain, before we get into some of the other questions I have for you, could you explain in kind of a watered down version what being enterprise ready even means?
Sure. Especially as it relates to Adobe Commerce, the default kind of SKU of Adobe Commerce, how it typically comes is in what we call a monolith. So you install it, you get not only kind of a commerce engine that can handle catalogs and customers and orders and all that, but you also get a front end with it as well. You get like a storefront and all that. So it's like an all-encompassing thing we call a monolith. Enterprises, companies that that typically want to take like an off-the-shelf like commerce engine, but they don't want to bundle it with kind of the theme and all the front-facing capabilities like a storefront that Adobe Commerce comes with. They tend to want to use Adobe Commerce as a commerce engine, but they want to build their own thing. So really when I say API first and kind of more enterprise, geared architecture, we're talking about the ability to use Adobe Commerce as kind of a back-end system, a service, if you will, and then you can build customer experiences on top of it, not based on Adobe Commerce. And this opens up the space to be able to build like mobile applications that work with Adobe Commerce in the back end, or any sort of experiences that get outside of kind of the traditional storefront monolith that you typically see. So that's really what I'm trying to get to.
Gotcha. So that would be more customizable as well.
Yeah, customizable is one way of saying it, but really I would say it's more extendable. So traditionally you get Adobe Commerce, you spin it up, it's an Adobe Commerce cloud, and you can customize it. Well, let me ask you this. How familiar are you with Adobe Commerce? So when I talk about Adobe Commerce, do you have like a picture in your mind of what I'm trying to describe?
I do have a picture in my mind, but I don't work in it every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I think it's, so it's almost like Shopify in a sense where you can basically set it up and you get an entire turkey solution with the front end storefront and all the back end trimmings that I'm saying. Enterprises typically, and I say enterprises, but really more affluent clients at this point, they'll oftentimes have a need where they'll say, well, I want to manage my content in a headless system, right? Because some of my content might be for my website, but other parts of my content might be for marketing collateral and email. And I have all sorts of channels that I have content, and I want to manage all my content in one system. Traditionally, Adobe Commerce manages content as well, right? It's like a website manager, so to speak. So you can log in, you can set up a homepage and all that type of stuff. But if you want to get to a position to where you're only using Adobe Commerce to say, handle store, handle purchases and that type of stuff, you really want to do what we call a decoupled architecture, or you might've heard the term like mock ready or compositional.
Yes.
And really what those mean is, that I have a concern like content. I don't want to use Adobe Commerce for it. I want to use another system. I have another concern like my ERP. I have another concern like reviews. And I want to use Power Reviews. I don't want to use Adobe Commerce's native reviews. I want to use Power Reviews, for example. So when we say compositional, really what we mean is you want to be able to go out into the market, talk to any vendor that provides the concern you want. So I might want to use Bloomreach for search and Power Reviews for reviews. And I want to be able to compose a solution out of all of that. And in that world, it comes a certain point where you might say to yourself, well, most of my customers use a mobile app. So I want to build a bespoke mobile app that really kind of speaks to their needs. But I don't want to have to build my own commerce engine for that. So you compose Adobe Commerce into it as just one component, right? So when we're talking about like enterprise-grade architectures, it really is kind of framing it to give a business so much flexibility, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, totally. Thank you for explaining that to me. I have more of a visualization of that now.
Well,
So
it even gets a little deeper. So like we have one of the types of customers that we tend to cater to now is what we call a house of brands. So I won't use any brand names, but imagine like a major enterprise. Like maybe you're going into like a Food Lion and you see all these brands. There's kind of an umbrella brand that handles most of that typically, and they have subsidiaries, and that's who kind of produces it. That's what we call a house of brands. So there's a lot of major corporations that are kind of consolidating, bringing brands under their house. And as a part of trying to kind of take advantage of economies of scale, they don't want all these subsidiary brands building their own commerce stack, building their own front end. They want
Yeah.
the one kind of major, the parent company to build that entire stack and then allow kind of these subsidiaries the ability to adopt it if they want or maybe do their own thing. So that's another kind of key piece. The larger we grow Blue Acorn kind of in the enterprise space, the more customers really need that type of flexibility. And when we're building something, we're not just building it once, we're building it with the notion that 50, 100 brands will be able to use this down the line. We really have to build something that can kind of stand the test of time.
Yeah, so the company, okay, that makes a lot of sense too. So if it was like the subsidiary trying instead of their own branding and going off of what the main brand wants, they can all keep it together and
Exactly.
coordinated. Yeah.
And if you think about like how these things typically go, the parent will purchase a child brand and they'll try to bring it into their house. But that child brand, existed beforehand, right? That's like a 30, 40, maybe even longer year old brand. They have their own in-house tech stack, their own in-house processes. And the enterprise has to figure out, well, in order for us to save money, they have to be able to adopt our technologies, but we can't do it at gunpoint. These guys have their own agency. They need to be able to agency in the sense that like, they're making their own decisions. That they need to be able to see a roadmap, adopt it, and actually see how it benefits them. So a lot of what we do is try to kind of produce that framing that if you go with this particular stack, not only will the parent be able to use it, but all the children will be able to use it as well. And they'll be able to adopt it in a kind of a quick, rapid way. And they can kind of get rid of some of their tech debt and really kind of move on to bigger, more important things.
Got it. Okay, so I guess moving on from like this conversation, when brands are wanting to get to that level, I guess like what mistakes do you see the businesses make, or what are the steps that businesses should be making to make this transition successful?
Well, I think a lot of it, honestly, I think it comes down to not thinking very deeply about the decisions you're making in terms of your tech stack. I think a lot of customers have this kind of worldview that each vendor is the same effectively. They're basically just picking a Coke or a Pepsi. And in that worldview, everything seems like it would interoperate and be pretty easy to kind of plug and play together. In truth, the devil is always in the details. And it's all, well, it's like choosing a phone or something, right? Like, if I were to ask you iPhone or Android, you probably have a pretty deep reason why you like one or the other. And if I were to just try to make them interchangeable for you, your life would shut down, right? Like, they aren't actually interchangeable, despite the fact that they basically do the same function. Any internet service is the same way. So, like, I kind of was poking on search providers. There is a whole landscape of like 50 search providers, like 10 of them that we tend to use. And you would think that they're all the same, but in reality, one couldn't be more different than the other. So, unless you kind of have a deep sense of what they really provide, how they might integrate with your brand, just kind of making a choice based on some marketing collateral can be catastrophic. So honestly, that's kind of what we tend to step in to do as a solution consulting team is we try to do that deep thought for you, try to get into your mind of why do you like an iPhone versus an Android, help you kind of make the decision and set it up correctly. Another one along the same line is you get into like a technology fitment kind of analysis if you're trying to make a choice. And I think a lot of people kind of fall for this this line of thinking that, oh, well, what I had before. So let's say a lot of customers, for example, come to us wanting a new implementation. And these are very rarely companies that were just established yesterday. They have a long history with the current technology stack, and they find it frustrating and they want a new one. And I find oftentimes they'll come in with this thought that, well, if we just didn't make the mistakes that we made with our last tech stack, if we were to just take all the learnings that we had over the last 5 years, really try hard and do this kind of new implementation perfectly, then everything will be sunshine and rainbows. Nothing will ever be broken. We'll have no tech debt. And it turns out that's not really how things work, right? So I think having a little bit of the wisdom to know that any implementation is naturally going to breed tech debt. And it really comes down to what type of tech debt it's going to be, where it's marshaled. And so for example, we talk a lot about API first. We kind of mentioned that. That is in service to a headless strategy, which is we don't want to build our consumer journey directly on Adobe Commerce. We want to build it in a different system and have it communicate with Adobe Commerce. So we want them to work together, but we don't want them to be one and the same. The reason why that is such a good idea in my mind is because at the end of the day, your tech debt, you don't want to be in a world where you're doing a lot of specific type of development in a system that can't be reused, even if you're using it once. And we worry that when you do the development in that monolith, that because it's Adobe Commerce and because your business has more systems than Adobe Commerce, you kind of pigeonhole the development work that you do. And I'm talking in terms of like I'm building a consumer experience that I right now I want to put on the web and I want people to use to be able to check out. But maybe tomorrow I want to have that same experience on a mobile app, or I want to have that same experience squished down so when I'm in Instagram, it shows almost like an ad or whatever the case may be. We have some customers that might want to have a big jumbo tablet right in their retail space, and they want to might have kind of the same stuff. The way you do that is not by doubling down on the monolith that is single channel. You do that by building a piece of software that can work in any channel, and that becomes a headless strategy. So when we think about this, we know intrinsically that no matter what we do, we're going to produce some tech debt. So what we want to do is we want to produce tech debt in a way that it's kind of widely blasted that kind of helps all these different channels. So when we have to go readdress it, we're not just working on the one thing, we're actually benefiting the major whole. There's a lot of kind of strategic thinking involved in why you make these decisions. And once you start kind of looking at the world as like a headless first philosophy, we need to be very API driven. We need to make sure that any asset and resource that we build not only works for the brand in front of us, but any brand that might come our way, the world starts looking a lot different and you start kind of making really different technical decisions.
That makes a lot of sense too. And I guess I'm just curious about why a company would choose not to go headless and focus on being API first. Is it just surrounding the cost and just the organizational headaches of getting everyone on board?
A little bit. It's also an interesting time in the space. So if you take a look at like true turnkey solutions for headless in like the Adobe Commerce space, they really don't exist. The one that does exist, Adobe will tell you not to use. So there is a lot more initial investment into actually building something headlessly like this.
Got it.
Whereas if you were to just take that monolith I'm talking about, you can get that to a state where you can start taking customers in a couple of weeks. It might be for like an agency, a little bit longer, but the delta in time is something to really be considered. And I think a lot of customers, when they look at that, and that's one thing that we hear a lot, well, let's just do that in phase two. Let's do an MVP right now that's as cheap as possible that just gets it out the door. And the problem with that is you never get to phase two. You always end up in the vehicle you actually built. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you're going to be stuck in making updates to the monolith instead of ever moving forward because you're
That's
going to
right.
find more bugs
Yeah.
and problems. And okay.
And a little kind of parenthetical point about the monolith and updates is that when you put everything into that one basket and then you get a security update that needs to come out, like Adobe Commerce Enterprise software, they have security updates, almost at a month's kind of release cadence at this point. And sometimes they're important to apply. Not all of them are so critical that you should drop what you're doing, but some of them are. And if you get one that's so critical that it really should become a priority, the size of the ask really starts to shift depending on whether or not you just use it as a commerce engine or if you use it for all of the above, to the point to where you could take so if you use Adobe's new philosophy called out-of-process extensibility, and this effectively means that you take Adobe Commerce, the native app, you don't make any modifications to it directly, and any modifications that you want to make, you do it in a way where you don't actually touch Adobe Commerce. You do it kind of as a sidecar. Under that approach, huge security update, you can have it out by the night. It takes you a couple of hours for the team to put it together. You can release it just fine. If you do it on the monolith, old school style, the way that we were doing it 3 or 4 years ago, it could be a month or two, right?
Really?
Like it. Yeah, it could be dramatically large. And it's not a month or two because it's just sitting there waiting. It's because the team has to implement it. All these bugs come out. The team has to go over it again, fix the bugs. And I don't know if you heard
Wow.
that song, but 99 bugs on the list, take one down, pass it around, 120 bugs on the list.
That.
They grow, right? So these actually, in aggregate, this makes a huge difference in cost because the way you're doing it is you're limiting the surface by which you actually have to perform these manual updates, and the head is intrinsically doesn't need to be as secure as the commerce engine, right? If the commerce engine's API is secure, then the head could be, terrible. It's still dealing with a secure API, so you've kind of mitigated the risk. If it's all in the one basket, on the other hand.
Everything stops.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Here I was just thinking, oh, they're kind of similar, but no, it's a vastly different experience. Well, that was really informative, and I think I've definitely learned a lot more. And now, as we're wrapping up 2024 and moving on to next year, I'm curious what you're seeing as the next big thing in digital experiences, and like, what's your biggest piece of advice for improving digital experiences into next year and beyond.
Well, Sarah, I can talk about holograms and generative AI and all that all I want, but I would say that the most tactical thing is probably CDP profiles. So a CDP is a customer data profile. Adobe has one called real-time CDP that's starting to kind of take off. And the idea, so like this is like in contrast to like an analytics system like Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics. And the idea is that an analytics system, in essence, is designed to allow you to track all the user interactions within one channel, like a web channel. It's designed for the web. If you want to track all interactions, period, despite whatever channel it is, be it a web channel or maybe your mobile app or maybe even brick and mortar, you can even conceptually, every time someone enters and exits the threshold of a door, it can go into a CDP. A CDP is a multi-channel, it's like an omni-channel way of doing this. And the idea is that the CDP will have a profile. This is Sarah. And as you interact with it, the profile starts to grow and it learns your interest or whatever really you want to track. But and then as you go through your digital life and as through your digital experience, me as a brand, I've started building this profile of you. So whenever I go to interact with you in a customer journey, I already know what your interests are, what you might like, what products here. I'm kind of tracking it in a meaningful way. And it's not only useful on your website, that one place that we typically kind of traditionally keep it out. This could also work when you're standing in line at the in the business, or you're getting an email, or anything, right? Like it becomes more general purpose. I think the implications there are huge. And once customers realize like the power there, I think CDPs are going to be the next frontier. I think it's really going to take off.
Yeah, I know we've talked about that before in other episodes and just in general working and talking about real-time CDP. And I definitely agree. It's beneficial not only for the business to understand their customers, but from the customer perspective as well.
Well, if you think about like what a customer is trying to do, like a website is the front end of a business, or it's really all their channels. And the CDP is almost like the back office, because really, at the end of the day, I think a CEO, a brand, wants to understand their customers so they can best sell them things, right? So I think the CDP becomes almost the crown jewel of the suite, almost, because if you don't understand your customers, you really have nothing. And this is the tool for which you do it.
Very good point. Well, Doug, again, every conversation I have with you, not even on this podcast, but just in general, is always really insightful. And I really appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Funnel, share it with your friends. It helps the podcast continue to grow. To learn more about Doug Hatcher or Blue Acorn ICI, visit the links in our show notes for more information. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, be sure to follow the podcast and give it a 5-star rating and review. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.